So, whether we are aware of it or not, this is a very special time in the Jewish calendar cycle, a passage from admonition to consolation, from anticipation and anxiety to death and rebirth. Of course, this is the high holiday cycle. But really, this special time is simply a reminder that whether we're aware of it or not, we're always in a very special time. That every moment of our lives, we are on this journey. And we are usually completely unaware, as if sleepwalking. So, those of you who have read the book, This Is Real, and you are completely unprepared, you'll recognize what I just said as Rabbi Lu's description of the days of awe as a journey of transformation. Every year in this group, we return to this book as our guide for the journey of the soul through the high holidays from Tisha B'Av to Sukkot. But what does that mean, the journey of the soul? So I'd like to give us time today to reflect on what that transformative journey is for each of us. Each of us is on a journey, and yet most of the time we're not aware of it. Instead, we have to be preoccupied with the tasks and demands of daily life in the visible world. However, as Rabbi Lu describes, not far beneath the surface, we sense the invisible world of our souls, our inner lives, however you want to call it, the unseen experiences that motivate and drive our behaviors in the visible world. The purpose of ritual, Rabbi Lu reminds us, is to render the invisible visible. So, what is the invisible journey of transformation that the high holidays reveal? First, let's look at what the invisible means to each of us. Do you sense as you move through life that there is an invisible journey, path, process that's constantly unfolding for you? And for the rest of life. A process that is in some way driving what happens on the surface. If that's the case, does it feel like the word soul captures the process, or maybe not? Of course, no one can say what's really there because the soul has never been discovered. Though many in science will say that our perception of this inner life will ultimately be explained by the same neuroscience that explains every other perception. Nevertheless, prior to the developments of neuroscience for millennia, really ever since the first ritual objects were developed, the world's art, literature, music, and religious practices are attempts to give expression to something that is not visible, some expression to the soul, or to soothe the soul, or to guide the soul on its journey through life. All religions narrate, in one way or another, an invisible journey we make through life, from birth to death, and even beyond, according to some religions. So, even before Freud began to write about the unconscious, religions, mystics, artists, writers, musicians had all given expression to the invisible aspects of life. Freud developed a scientific model and psychological treatment based on the idea that the invisible processes of the unconscious are driving our behaviors in the visible world. Freud, while Jewish, was not writing about the hidden world of the psyche as a religious or spiritual phenomenon. He believed that one day we would find the neurologic basis for all these invisible phenomena. He was trying to explain what all the irrational things about human behaviors as coming from some cause, some causes. And the psychoanalytic concepts that he and his colleagues developed, it turns out, have influenced the thinking and writing of two of our favorite interpreters of Jewish text and tradition, Aviva Zornberg, who studied psychoanalytic writings and has contributed to psychoanalytic journals, and Alan Liu, who trained as a marriage and family therapist. So art and religion both give shape, sound, imagery, and words to the invisible forces that we sense beneath the surface. Once, when I was describing to a friend the interpretive process of Torah study that several of us love to engage in at TBC, a non-religious friend of mine asked, "How is studying Torah different from studying any other great literary work? Wouldn't you get just as much out of studying Shakespeare?" And I thought about this a good bit. One difference, of course, is that Torah has been interpreted and studied over the millennia by people devoted to understanding the spiritual meaning and ethical guidance within the text. And so whenever we read and study it and discuss it, we tap into, as well as enrich, this ongoing process of interpretation each time we read and discuss Torah. And of course, it's also an origin story, a mythic story of our origins, and a story of why we should feel special. We can talk more about that in another, could devote a whole session to that. But at the moment, it seems that what's most powerful about studying Torah rather than Shakespeare is that Torah is associated over time with layers and layers of robust, it's a robust set of rituals which we can embody and enact. And in doing so, we join others in a shared process of making the invisible visible. Together, we participate in the great pageant that enacts the journey of the soul, not only bringing our attention to this mysterious process, but also allowing us to engage with it through physical acts. Everything from wearing different clothes and shoes to carrying around the Torah, kissing the Torah, praying, prostrating, and finally, of course, fasting and enacting, embodying, rehearsing our own death. Even if we never articulate the soul's journey, we immerse ourselves through these rituals in the during the high holiday services and observances. So, what are the markers along this journey, and which of them are important to you? I'll go through the list and I'll add some personal associations to how the rituals bring my own invisible world into view at times, just as a to motivate each of us to think, well, what does it mean to me? Obviously, it'll be different. What it means to you will be different from what it means to me. Almost 2 weeks ago, we observed Tisha B'Av, the day of mourning for the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, the day of the crumbling of the great walls. Rabbi Liu points out that the crumbling of the walls can reflect our experience when we feel a loss of beliefs, of institutions we have constructed around us to keep us secure. When we see the cracks in those structures that we believe in, it is, of course, a time of grieving and loss, but it can also be a time of liberation, of new beginnings, when we recognize that the walls that made us feel secure also kept us isolated from the rest of life. I think we've all recognized these things. You could think of something like walls that were erected in our society around gender roles. You know, so many walls that the crumbling of which has really allowed us to appreciate more how people really are rather than how much they conform to the rigid walls we've erected. I have been fortunate to live long enough to have idealized several mentors who proved themselves to be only human, flawed in some of their ways of thinking, like the rest of us. I recognize that I've clung fast to certain theories in science and psychology that have later been shown to be inadequate. So over the years, I've learned to restrain my tendency to believe that this next discovery really reveals the truth, because now I know that ultimately a better explanation will emerge, no matter how good this one seems. So we know that new structures will arise, and the walls will crumble again, liberating our thinking so that newer structures can emerge. This year, in a little over a week, the month of Elul will begin on September 3rd. And in the month of Elul, we'll blow the shofar every morning to remind us that we devote this month to waking up, to introspection and seeing ourselves as we are, to look at what we're really doing. And this month of introspection prepares us for Slichot, when we chant penitential prayers and songs. So as the journey continues through the month of Elul to Slichot in preparation for Rosh Hashanah, we're anticipating this moment in Rosh Hashanah when the ritual offers us the metaphor of being written into the book of life or death, and on Yom Kippur, being our fate being sealed. And it's a way we prepare each year to recognize that any of us could die in the coming year. And we prepare by recognizing how we have missed the mark, by acknowledging and saying out loud what we have done that has been hurtful, by asking for forgiveness, as one might feel compelled to do prior to dying. So it's a little I don't want to be surprised that I'm going to be dying at some point. I want to address some of these things that I need to say to others now rather than wait. So there are many personal, ethical, and social reasons why it's important to acknowledge our mistakes and apologize. But it's also a step in becoming closer to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, to our loved ones, to ourselves, and to all of life. When we're not honest with ourselves and each other, we're putting up barriers to genuine closeness between ourselves and others and within ourselves. We try to distance ourselves from things we don't like about ourselves. In this way, the rituals of the high holidays help us to feel more comfortable with ourselves just as we are. We all acknowledge together things that either we as individuals have or haven't done, but as a group, we know all of these things have been done by humans. And so we know that whatever we've done, other people have done, we're part of the human race, and we can feel part of this human community without feeling the need to hide these aspects of ourselves. And in doing so, we can feel greater genuineness with ourselves and with our loved ones. This openness, this connection to others, is enacted and embodied in the holiday of Sukkot, when we build a structure that's open. It doesn't separate us from the stars above, from the wind and the rain. It symbolizes our acceptance of impermanence. We started the holiday journey with Tisha B'Av, when the strong, solid walls came down, and we end up feeling paradoxically more happy and secure in a structure which is intentionally flimsy, open, and impermanent. And of course, we got to this joyful state through our ritual enactment of dying on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we embrace, we embody the thing we usually try to avoid the most, death. And through the great ritual enactment of dying, by not eating, not engaging in any bodily pleasures, which by the end of the day, we feel like we're dying. Through facing the reality that we will inevitably one day die, by chanting the Unatana Tokef, the prayer which enumerates all the different ways we might at any moment die. Through this great psychological intervention that we might call exposure therapy to death, we emerge with great appreciation for being alive, for just being able to take a sip of water, eat food, hug our loved ones, be together. Like someone who has had a near-death experience, we appreciate each moment of being alive for a while, until the intensity of the experience fades and we start getting preoccupied again with the myriad tasks of life, and we lose touch with being part of this subterranean river of life that is moving us inevitably on the path between birth and death. So far, I've talked about this invisible journey of the soul without really saying what it is, because of course, it's a different journey for each of us. So today, I'd like to leave more time to give everyone a chance to reflect on what in this moment comes to mind for you as we talk about this invisible journey of the soul, this transformative journey. So I'll end by reading a passage from This Is Real, a passage that I think I read every year. And listen without trying hard to think about it. It just see what comes to mind, and then we'll have time to discuss in breakout rooms. In the invisible world, we live out our routine. And sometimes messy lives. We have jobs, families, houses. Our lives seem quite ordinary and undramatic. It is only beneath the surface of this world that the real and unseen drama of our lives is unfolding. Only there that the walls of the house crumble and fall, that the horn sounds 100 times, that the gate between heaven and earth opens and the great books of life and death open as well. It is there that the court is convened, that we rehearse our own death, that the gates close again, and that we finally come home to the mere idea of the very house that crumbled and fell in the first place. If the purpose of ritual is to render the invisible visible, then what is the profound, universal, unseen, and unspoken reality that all of this ritual reflects? What journey of the soul, what invisible journey of transformation does all of this make visible? On this journey, our soul will awaken to itself. We will venture from innocence to sin and to innocence again. This is a journey from denial to awareness, from self-deception to judgment. We will learn our divine name. We will move from from hatred, from self-hatred to self-forgiveness, from anger to healing, from hard-heartedness to brokenheartedness. This is the journey the soul takes to transform itself and to evolve. The journey from boredom and staleness, from deadness to renewal. So we'll have a few moments for reflection.